Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back a rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Good evening, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. The Southpaws, episode 443, Patio Cast 2019. I am Savrin.
I'm Fuzzle.
And I'm Shiva.
And we are here on the patio for the first time in 2019, and it is really nice out tonight.
I thought we did one earlier in the spring. For the fall of 2019.
Okay, the first one for the fall, sure.
And hopefully no power outages this week.
It's the first patio cast of the 2019-2020 patio season.
There we go. Yeah, sure. Let's delineate it out so that I'm not wrong. It's like, the first patio cast of 2019 in October. There we go. Because we certainly couldn't do it last week where we had storms and knocked out our power.
Yeah.
And
it was also warm as balls for the first time that entire week.
Yeah, it was like, well, it's been cool, but we're going to have a storm front come through that also makes it weirdly warm.
We are going to be subject, of course, to outdoor noises, probably occasional dog noises.
I will edit out what I can, but yes, there will be, unfortunately, some car farts and or maybe dog barks.
Or airplanes, that's happened.
Yep, as it happens. So, it has been only a few days since you last got an episode from us, because I didn't get around to messing with it until Tuesday, because reasons. I just kind of forgot about it, and then recorded a little bit extra.
And it's a totally legit reason, Savrin.
Hey, it happens. It was an episode that was really short,
yeah.
And we didn't really hit any major topics. I actually put it out same day, Patreon, and main feed, and I didn't charge for the Patreons because I was just like this is a quickie. I slapped it together.
Yeah.
We didn't get to the hell world part because we didn't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very positive, relaxed, fit episode.
Yeah.
I've had a pretty good day. I've had a pretty good week. I am now a homeowner, asterisk, 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 in Final Fantasy 14.
I was going to say.
Well, we do need to get moving on finding a house, or at least our next apartment, because we have 6 months left on this lease and we're not planning on renewing because they're wanting to jack up the rents. And
too stupid amount.
Yeah, and they want to cycle out all the old tenants so that they can remodel the apartments, make them fancier.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're redoing the pool and stuff. They're trying to upscale the street, so.
Yeah.
They got a lot of work to upscale that street because
yeah.
Most of it, your complex is the nicest one on that street. Most of the others are kind of trash fiery.
Yeah.
But they put in those new super bright lights. If you haven't been down there lately, these super white, bright LEDs instead of the old phosphorescent looking ones.
There's squeaking.
Yeah, it's the watering system for my herbs turning
okay.
off.
I was just like, is there a critter in the plants over there that's going to jump out at me?
No, that tells me it's 8 o'clock because it waters from 7 to 8.
Oh. Well, you are correct.
It's going to be a big hung werewolf is going to come through your window, Savrin.
Hell yeah. I'm prepared.
With 13 of his friends.
Even better. So, dinner. What a good dog.
Yeah, Sarah just brought me dinner.
So no, actually, I lucked out super hard today, and in Final Fantasy 14, the housing market's ultra fucked. So,
Just like in real life,
though actually it's a lot fairer than in real life, because people can only own one house. Guilds can only own one house. You can't be one person that owns like an entire block of houses. Now there is apparently on one server a guild that has purchased all the properties in one subdivision on one server plot.
That's kind of cool though.
But that's,
so you and your guildies can all be living together.
Yeah. And I lucked out super hard because I logged on today and there was a house next to my guild house that was for sale, or as a plot of land, because you don't get the house.
You
have
buy the
plot
land.
Of land, then you have to buy the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's $3 million for the plot of land, and a further $500,000 for the house.
So how much money did you have?
I had a little over $3.5 million, so I had enough, but I'd be pretty flat broke.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this RNG to prevent sniping, that when a house goes on the market, you cannot purchase it for a random period of time up to 22 hours later before you can actually purchase it.
And then you have to see if the offer is accepted or if anyone puts in a counter offer.
And they come in and look at you and say, oh, you're a cat girl. I'm really looking for a human.
It's a Final Fantasy HOA. They're like, oh, no furries.
Oh, man. It's like the HOA comes by and like, look, we really can't have you building 14 giant topiary chocobos that really lowers the property values. We have a strict
no pet policy, so as a cat girl, we can't have you shedding all over the neighborhood.
Well, I was getting blocked by the timer for a while, and I looked around, and there was literally, of the 4,032 houses that are potentially available for purchase on Brynhildr, there were two for sale. And the other plot that was for sale was like for $3.6 million, so it was more money than I even had, so... Mm-hmm. There was the one plot. And I really did go check, because you can check each of the wards and each of the subdivisions to see how many things are for sale. And there was literally...
Final Fantasy houses show up on Trulia and Realtor.com.
Yeah. You got to be lucky, because you know you don't want some Lalafell coming in with their bulging money bags and be like, nope, I'm buying this and you. But...
God.
I was going to go... I had to go buy the... store, and so I was like, well, I'm gonna log in one last time and check, and was actually able to get it, and my guildies were very envious and happy, and like one of my guildies gave me a million gil to buy house furnishings, mm-hmm. because like I had a little apartment in the game, but then I like pulled everything out of there, shoved it in the house, and realized like, holy shit, my walls are all barren. This I have a house now and not a apartment in Final Fantasy 14. So I have to do the adult thing and like buy furnishings for my fantasy apartment. That was a nice thing that happened, and anybody that plays Final Fantasy and has tried to get a house will understand how big of a deal that is. It was like, I can do so many things in this game that I can't in real life. Cast magic, ride a dragon,
buy a house.
God, this really is a fantasy game. So that was a good thing that happened today. And yeah, I got this really rad spellbook bag that I ordered off of HotTopic.com that came in today.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go and get that. But yay, it's a really nice little, it looks like a grimoire. It says Book of Witchcraft Spells and Potions, and it's just a shoulder bag. It's got a magnetic clasp and all that stuff.
Speaking of owning houses, did I ever tell you about a friend of mine that worked at ADT back in the day?
No.
He got this phone call. He was in the call center, so he got a phone call from a customer, and the customer said they're a homeowner, and he's like, homeowner. He's like, I know what a homo is. What's a nair? Homeowner! Like, it just took like a minute for his brain to kind of catch up, I guess.
You had something pretty cool pop up today, and I didn't know about it, and I guess you didn't know about it till it came up either.
Yeah, it happened yesterday, but yeah.
An artist that you work with, Ace,
also known as Roanoke,
got to do a comic.
Yes. So,
pitch, talk fuzz.
Okay, so Ace got to do a comic for Ojoy Sex Toy, which is drawn by Erica Moen and written by her and her husband, Matthew Nolan. And it's pretty popular. They've put out like 5 book collections via Kickstarter, which is pretty cool. And they've had furries collaborate on comics and stuff with them before. Years ago, they did sort of like a What the Fandom is About sort of thing that Kyle wrote and Kiovi drew. And that was really cool. That was in like volume 1 or 2, I think. But Ace got to do a comic. It was about female sterilization. It was about how they didn't want kids. It become like sort of a phobia for them over the years. Like, just, I don't just not want kids. I'm just actively terrified of it. Or like, you can get pregnant from pre-cum and checking condoms for leaks. And there's a drawing of like, condoms have X failure rates. IUDs have X failure rates and stuff like that. And then went to their doctor and explained this. And the doctor's like, well, have you heard of this procedure? I don't remember the name of it. It's basically where they go in and they clip off the fallopian tubes and actually remove like a little chunk of them. So
was it tubal ligation?
It wasn't a tubal ligation. It was something else. It was a longer, more technical sounding name. It looks a lot like tubal ligation, but I guess maybe it's more permanent. Because I know with some tubal ligations, they just put a clip of some kind on the fallopian tubes that basically stops any eggs from going through. But other kind, they actually cut a piece of the tube out. And it looks like this one actually cut pieces of the tubes out and then seal both ends. So you still have your ovaries and your uterus and everything, which means that you don't have to worry about, if you remove the ovaries, you instantly go into menopause. I noticed because my mother had to have a hysterectomy when she got cervical cancer years
ago. And when I got my own, I got spayed, that was something I had looked at, and I didn't want to go into menopause, so I opted to get done what I got done.
Right.
Yeah, so the term in the comic is bilateral scalpingectomy, where basically they leave the ovaries inside, but they take out the fallopian tubes entirely.
Ah, okay.
So the ovaries are still there to produce hormones, but there's nowhere for the eggs to go.
And everything else remains the same with your body. You just absolutely can't get pregnant. And it really freed them up from a lot of worry and concern and this phobia that they'd had that was really affecting their life. So,
I understand completely.
Yeah.
I mean, my own history is like I had a stroke when I was 27. I was told never, ever, 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 ever get pregnant because you'll probably die.
Yeah.
And when I had my stroke, the blood clot was due to birth control medication.
That's right. I remember you telling me.
So I could no longer take birth control medication because I'll probably throw another clot and die anyways. So now I can no longer take medication to prevent this, hormonal in any way, shape, or form. And I also couldn't get pregnant. So I'm pretty much down to condoms and diaphragms and other like less secure ways to go. So that means that every time I was intimate from the time I received that news, it was rather fear inducing because, oh God.
Yeah.
You know, and plus, I mean, I was with partners I loved and it would have killed me to have to terminate a pregnancy with one of them as a father.
Yeah.
So it was heart-wrenching and terrifying for me for years every time I was intimate with them. So I understand exactly where they're coming from as being terrified of it because it sucks.
Yep.
You know, because every month you're praying, please, 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 please let Aunt Flo come.
Yeah.
And with me being as erratic as I do, it made it really hard to tell, am I just late or did I get pregnant?
Yep.
So I understand 100%.
Ace covers a lot of that same kind of thing in the comic, too. So it's very similar. So, of course, it's a furry comic because, you know, use their furry characters and partner's furry character and stuff like that. I only found out about it because I'd seen Kit, Kyle's husband, retweeted Ace's tweet saying, hey, I'm in this, but I did a No Joy Sex Toy and here's the link. And of course, there's links to their FA and Twitter and everything like that. And then I decided, hey, this seems like a good opportunity. So I put all four of their comics that we publish on sale. So that's Excalibur, Critical Success, Table for Three, and Safe Word. We do the print editions. And so I put them all on sale and I tweeted about it. And of course, Ace retweeted it, and I asked Matthew Nolan if he would retweet it, and he retweeted it. So it basically got some. Their artwork is very highlighted when they have this forum. You know, this is a good opportunity for artists. I mean,
and I know like Erica Moe and such is all about like sharing credit with other artists and pimping them,
and they do get paid. And it is also great exposure at the same time. Like, all the artists get paid, but it is also a good platform for exposure to their work. So I figured, well, I mean, going along with that, if we sell the comics, you know, we pay a royalty. So it's still more money going in the artist's pocket, basically,
that's cool.
From this. So,
and in the description of the comic, they also say, they specifically state that Table for Three and Safe Word are both very good.
Yeah.
And they are very good, very hot comics. I mean, holy shit, I don't think I've read 64 pages of fucking. It's amazing.
I don't think I've read Table for Three, but I love Safe Word.
Oh, Table for Three was the first one. It's so good. And I love it because it's like a truly bisexual comic, which you don't always see that often, but mm-hmm. there's like the guy and the girl. They're a married couple, and the guy is bi, and for his birthday, she gets him a twink.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did read that one. It is really good.
Yeah, yeah. And all three of them, the really cute characters, are on the cover and everything like that. All those characters have had dockies. Safe Word is about her femdoming her husband.
And it's fucking hot as hell.
Yeah, and Excalibur is...
pegging.
She buys a massive fucking... dildo and ends up pegging him.
Yeah, that one's also good.
Yeah.
It's like things that are interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Fendom.
And Peggy, I also.
Bisexual.
Just really love Ace's artwork.
It's super expressive. It's great.
Yeah.
I love their expressions.
Yeah. It's the general style. It's just really, really good. So, yeah, that was like big news for us. And, and you retweeted it, and a bunch of our friends retweeted and liked it and everything. So I felt pretty happy about that. So
it's always good to be able to promote an artist you genuinely enjoy their work.
Yeah.
Like, this artist seems cool, and they make really cute art that is also really hot. So, yeah, get it to the broader world.
I'm always happy whenever any of my authors or artists gets, like, a big platform like that where their work is going to be more known. I don't know if I probably mentioned it at the beginning of the month, but Ursula Vernon's mainstream published horror novel came out on October 1st. It's called The Twisted Ones. And that was, we did talk about this because we're talking about the publisher. It's Orbit or Saga Press. I think it's Saga does it. And they're a,
I don't think we talked about it on a show. I think we,
you and I talked about it at the hookah bar.
Right.
Because we're talking about imprints and how there's only five major publishers.
That's what you're remembering. Right.
They are, I believe, an imprint of Random House. So, Ursula's now been published by one of, like, the big five.
So is it imprint kind of like a sub-company, or is it just, like, a name for their line, or...?
It's a name for different lines. Like, I own Argyle Productions. That's my publishing company. For Planet and Bad Dog Books are imprints of Argyle. So I have a different logo and a different name. Or like, oh, if we're going, like, Fang and Roar... and Claw. I did Claw because Fang and Roar were already doing this, but Fang and Roar were always published by Bad Dog Books, so I kept them as Bad Dog Books title, even after we took over that imprint. But all my furry type stuff we publish under Fur Planet. You know, it's got the paws on the logo. It's very cute. And the name fits into the furry community.
I love that thing you did of, was it Rory the other day of making ebooks?
Yeah, the other day I did ebook editions of like four of our books that we published at Anthrocon, and I posted a little picture for those that haven't seen it of Rory leaning down on a copy of Fang 9 trying to push it into my iPad, and I was like, this is how you make an ebook, right? You just shove it into the tablet. And I put it on the Fur Planet Twitter, and a lot of people found that amusing. So, cause,
very cute.
Because Rory's cute. But yeah, that's basically all an imprint is. Occasionally, it's like for the really big companies, it's some kind of wholly owned subsidiary company in its own right that they also own. But for most publishers, it's just another name that they own that they put books out, because they'll release all their romance books under one name. You know, like Harlequin is like one of the well-known romance publishers, and they're probably an imprint of one of the larger publishing conglomerates.
Like how Tor is all sci-fi.
Tor is all sci-fi, but they're owned by Macmillan, from what I, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. So. And like
Bane, they're, I don't know who they're owned by, but they're also going to be owned by one of the... There's only... outside of small press independent publishers like Fur Planet, there's only five publishing companies, and the five main publishers, and that's worldwide. It was six, but then Penguin merged with Random House a few years ago and became Random Penguin. Not really. It's just called Penguin Random House now. But yeah, it's crazy. It's sort of like the car manufacturers, how like Lexus is like it's a Toyota. Mm-hmm. It's the high-end name of the Toyota.
Like Acura is Honda.
Only like three main makers of cars, General Motors, Ford, and like, well, in the U.S. And there's like Daimler Chrysler owns like most everything in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then there's like BMW things on its own. And then there's Mitsubishi and Toyota and Hyundai and Honda. They're four separate companies over in East Asia and Japan.
Yeah.
But yeah, like,
There's American automakers. Names,
but they're owned by the same three companies. It's just like what they do. Like Dodge is just trucks now.
Yeah.
And that's their Ram line. And think they're owned by Chevrolet?
No, they're owned by Chrysler.
Okay. So it's, again, it's just like they're.
So Chrysler owns Jeep and Dodge. And they also own Plymouth, but they retired the Plymouth line.
Yeah.
And they own a bunch of other companies. So if you see a Jeep something or other, Chrysler LeBaron is a car. So that's Chrysler putting their
Chevy?
Own name on it.
Or Chevy their own thing.
That might be Chevy, maybe General Motors. It's, I think it's Ford, GM, and Chrysler are the three auto American automakers.
Obviously, we're not car people, so...
Yeah.
You know, it's like
and
just.
It's
you know,
also just, I mean, like, I'm a book person and it's just hard to keep track. There's just so many, like, little other sub brands and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is honestly true of everything in capitalism. Like, if you look at everything that, say, General Mills owns, and, like,
Kellogg's,
like, you're standing in the cereal aisle and you'll see 10 cereals, two companies will own all of them. You know, so they just kind of they put out a cereal in each individual market. Like, oh, this company has a flake style one. This other one will have a flake style one.
And sometimes they're old companies that used to exist on their own, and they still had a good name, but they got purchased by a larger company.
Yeah,
so that they still maintain their lines.
That often happens to independent publishers too. Independent publishers will get to a certain size and will then be purchased by one of the big five. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a company under that. Like mergers and acquisitions, man. I mean, capitalism comes down to like 10 companies owning 90% of everything.
Well, you know, we can talk about, there's a lot of that actually. Like, you know, a couple weeks ago, there was that one Turning Point USA dipshit that went to Cuba and went to one of their restaurant supply shops and was like, holy shit, instead of lol communism, no food, they're like, lol communism, only one brand of food. Then it was basically pointed out that when it comes
Cisco
down to United States food companies, there's like 11.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to media companies, there's like 6. So, you know, they had to do a quick swerve from communism, no food to they only have one brand. I'm like, well, in the U.S., there's like 6 brands in reality. So, you know.
They put out a whole bunch of different flavors. That's it.
Yeah. It's like you have you know, like we go – like you said, you go to the cereal aisle and there's like 50 feet of cereal.
Yeah.
But it's owned by like a half dozen companies. And most of them are made in the same fucking factories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go to Aldi, anything like that, or Trader Joe's that's private label, it's still manufactured in the same facilities. Mm-hmm. Like, you could get, for the longest time, these Thin Mint cookies from Trader Joe's that are literally made in the same bakery as Girl Scout Thin Mints. Like, it really kind of killed the magic of Thin Mints for people when you realize that these other companies were just making them year-round. You didn't have to get them from the Girl Scouts. Now, you should totally support the Girl Scouts because they're, you know, a good organization that's not run by Mormons and is, you know, trans-accepting. So, you know, never had a problem with them and they make good cookies. People realizing that, oh, actually, you know, these aren't made in some artisanal factory by elves. It's just... you know, the bakery in San Antonio that makes a shitload of different cookies, and they make a batch of Thin Mints that day, and then they make chocolate chip ones the next.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just that weird sort of like, there's only really a few people behind the scenes running things.
Mm-hmm.
And same as like on the media side, Crunchyroll used to be its own thing, and then Rooster Teeth used to be its own thing. Then they got bought by a conglomerate called Otter Media, which in turn is owned by Warner, which further up the chain, like, you go all the way to the top, and it's owned by fucking AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, we have this illusion of being a bunch of different media companies, and they are making different things, but they're still this vast chunk of it, the entertainment sphere is owned by one group.
Yeah. And even just looking at Disney is the obvious thing. Jesus. And it's like the ads for Disney Plus kind of prove it. They're like, hey, here's all the media properties that we own. You know, they don't even have to license from any other company if they don't want to, because they've bought so many companies and produced so many companies. I mean, they own ABC. They could they could put anything on there that's ever aired on ABC, probably.
Yeah. And like, there was that Watch Disney Plus, the legit account, which they started listing like every single random property and film they've ever made from the beginning.
Skipping 1946.
Yeah, making sure that they skipped 1946 for some reason. I don't know what came out in 1946. It is a mystery.
Is that the Br'er Rabbit?
Song of the South, yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's not included on Disney Plus. I wonder why.
Was it you that posted the whole thing about, you know, for Kingdom Hearts, of there's some worlds that need to remain asleep?
Yeah.
It's a Song of the South.
Yeah, it's like, wow, Briar Rabbit's world. Now that can fall to darkness. I don't care. But yeah, that's coming out. And then, of course, people were having fun making fake movies like The Cheetah Kisser.
Yeah.
And various other things like that. Like, wow. And the thing is, with Disney, they're so prolific in their movie making. And
it's really hard to tell what's a parody and what isn't.
Like, I wouldn't know without someone like going, lol, this is so funny. This is a joke. Because they made so many movies. Like, everybody remembers, oh, they made lots of animated films. They made a ton of live-action garbage.
Which Nutty Professor is based on.
And I'm not even meaning that, but like, actual just literal garbage films.
Oh, I wasn't even saying, sorry, like, I didn't mean to imply that was garbage.
No. I'm just saying, like, they've made just so many damn movies that nobody remembers because they're just popcorn films that you enjoy and discard.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you remember back in probably the late 80s, early 90s, there was like the Disney Sunday Night Movie or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, and it was always some weird shit that I'd never heard of from like the 60s.
Oh, no. One of them was actually one that I really enjoyed because I don't know how well it holds up. It's called Earth Star Voyager. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It was a two-parter, aired in two-hour segments over 2 weeks. And it's a sci-fi thing where their idea was that it was going to be a really long mission. So instead of doing like cryo-freezing or anything like that, like a lot of colony ship type situations do, they decided they're going to just have a really young crew. So like the youngest crew member is like 13. And it's just the kids' seat of the movie because Disney's for kids, right?
Uh-huh.
So the crew ranges in age from like 13 to 18 or something like that, you know? Like, the first officer is, like, 18, and, like, the captain is, like, an older person who is eventually supposed to die of old age and, you know, leave the first officer in charge. And I believe I'm remembering this right. He gets killed fairly early on. And then they find this other ship, and they discover this vast conspiracy, and it's a whole thing. Anyway, I was fairly youngish when it came out, and I enjoyed it. And I don't know if it holds up today. I think I had to, like, download a copy of it years ago because it was not available to buy on DVD. It might have been put out somewhere more official nowadays if we wanted to track down a copy, but that's one that I remember. That was like, it was one that like sort of felt like this could have been a series, and I don't know if maybe it was intended to be, but it didn't rate high enough or something like that. But
I don't know.
We'll try to dig it up if you want to watch like a 3-hour Disney sci-fi movie sometime.
Sure. Well, this actually does lead into the next topic on the chain.
Avengers?
No.
Speaking of 3-hour Disney movies.
No. Though the game that I'm going to be talking about is probably longer than 3 hours.
Or Star Wars 9 coming out in a few weeks.
God, yeah, because that comes out, what, December 11th or something like that?
Early December, yeah, something like that.
Jesus, yeah, it's like six, seven weeks away. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, so the game I'm going to talk about actually called The Outer Worlds. It's a science fiction game. It's made by Obsidian. It's basically like a space Fallout where you are a cryo-sleeped colonist who their ship got fucked up in the company because this is supposed to be a corporate-run colony. They didn't want the news to affect their bottom line, so they left you out there floating for like 80 years in cryosleep.
Uh-huh.
And you get rescued by this doc that looked a lot like Rick from Rick and Morty to me.
I'm thinking of Ripley floating in cryo for like 850 years or something like that between Aliens 1 and 2.
Yeah. Well, in this particular case, you get rescued from the ship, and the guy that rescues like, look, we need to go to the colonies, and you're going to help me get some more medical supplies so I can actually free the rest of the people that are here. And like, the guy's wanted by the corporations, and you more or less immediately out there causing shit. But the reason I'm bringing it up, I mean, it does look pretty cool, and I'm probably might gonna pick it up at launch if it's not like a buggy piece of shit. But one thing that they've done, and this is something that I hope more
turns
games
out
do,
that it's actually owned by Halliburton and it's only being made because of war profiteering.
No.
Okay. All right. I thought you were leading into our Obsidian is actually owned by this company, which is owned by this company, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton.
Actually, I think they are an independent company.
Okay.
No. On their one thing that they've done with their character creation, which I think is kind of cool, is they've decoupled gender and appearance from your character creation.
Right, yeah.
So, like, the characters, you can be as masculine or as feminine as you want, and then with the gender options, they'll change how they refer to you, ma'am or sir, regardless of your appearance.
Are there sliders for bulge and boob and butt size?
No, because there is...
Because you could have huge bulge, huge butt, huge boob. You look like a Doug Winger character.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be mods for it, because it's not an online game. Like, in the character creator, they just hit random, and the character could come up looking very masculine, or, like in this particular one, it's a balding woman with a full beard, but you know, it says gender female, but the appearance is what the appearance is, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I don't know much about the game beyond, like, I watched the quick look EX that Giant Bomb did,
yeah,
with the devs, and like, the first NPC you run into is he's like, he accidentally shot himself because he's like a new recruit, but the first thing he does when he meets you is he like does the mandatory corporate greeting. You tried the best. No, try the rest. Spacer's choice. Or something like that. And he's like, can you help me? And then when you finish the thing, he does the corporate thing again. So like, this is heavily indoctrinated corporate culture.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're fighting space capitalism, it seems so far. And
I'm just thinking, like, he shot himself because he's a new recruit. I'm thinking, don't they teach you on day one of basic not to do this? Who knows? I hope I just looked into my hookah hose like it was a gun.
Yeah.
And well, killed me.
But the quick look looks really cool, and it comes out next week, so I might pick that up. That looks like something you could, like, stream, maybe. Mm. I say that, and I'm a total liar, but it does look like a fun game. But you would definitely check that out on Giant Bomb's website if you want to see what that's about.
Cool.
So, in the video, he's like, I'm going to do the dick thing, and he shot the NPC that gave him his gun, who shot himself. He's like, I'm just finishing the job. He's like, I would never do this in my real game, and I'd probably, like, reload my save.
I never do this in real life.
Well, he said he wouldn't do it in his real game, but this is for a quick look, so it's not like he's coming back to this save.
Right.
And he, like, shot the guy, and I'm like, why would you do that? You just healed him. You shot him. Why? Anyways, video games make you a sociopath. Sorry.
That makes me think of there's this Doctor Who audio where something gets fucked up and all the Doctor's companions gain the ability to regenerate. But they regenerate and they just look like themselves. So they heal all their wounds, basically. Okay, so the Master discovers this by accident. And it's like, oh, well, let's see if that happens again. Shoots her again. She regenerates. She's like, wait a minute. Did you know that would happen the first time you shot me? Oh, yes, of course. And the Master's pretending like, I totally wouldn't have just shot you. And he's like, no, you didn't. He tried to kill me. Regenerate.
It's Space Fallout. I'm going to wait for, I mean, obviously wait for the reviews, but it seems neat. And just the whole thing where games are giving you that flexibility. I mean, yeah, they're doing that with Cyberpunk 2077. They mm-hmm. did it with this. And, like, I mean, they did it back in the day in Saints Row the Third.
Yeah.
Actually, Saints Row 2, even. So.
But that was before games were political.
Yeah. Well, after all, you know, there are only two genders, male and political.
Wow.
So we just passed. So shifting topics again, because unless you want to talk about video games, no.
I played Super Mario Brothers 3 when I was younger, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And you played Night in the Woods, didn't you?
And I played Night in the Woods a bit, yeah. I also played Tetris on the Game Boy. That game is so good.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. Check out these graphics, gray on green.
Yep. So
that's when I say Game Boy, I mean thunk Game Boy.
The gray brick.
Yes.
The gray brick boy.
Yeah. None of your fancy folding full color screen.
He's giving you the death glare.
I've tried to say, hey, let's shift to the next topic, and you've interrupted me twice, Fuzz. You're within smacking range. Anyways.
Fine.
So
Shiva, you ever look up at the stars on Hookah? Actually, I lied. There are no stars here.
No, there is the roof.
Because we're in Dallas.
Indigenous People Day just passed, a.k.a. Columbus Day in the U.S., but fuck Columbus. He's a real piece of shit.
Fun fact, Columbus is in the bad place.
On account of all the raping, murder, and genocide that he did. Like, he was a real piece of shit. We've gotten past the whole, Columbus discovered America. Nah, he was just a monster.
In the year 1492, Columbus killed a lot of people.
Yeah, like, a lot of people. So, the thing that is cool, though, is that on Indigenous Peoples Day, someone posted a map, Corey Bing, I think it was, posted a map of the tribal ranges in North America, and you can figure out on whose land you're living.
Yeah. So, who did we steal Carrollton from?
We stole Carrollton from the Wichita. Well, technically, the Texas settlers came in and stole the land, and we're borrowing it further down the chain, but we still stole it too, right? Because we're the white man on their land. So... what's interesting is, like, the Wichita, they were agrarian during the spring and summer and would travel around, but they would winter further south in, like, our area, because they lived primarily in southern Oklahoma along the Red River. But they are an extant tribe. They still exist today. They have a reservation in southern Oklahoma. And if you go to wichitatribe.com, you can read their history. And I was like, wow. How badly did we fuck them up? Because the history of North American Native relations, not good. But basically, like, they...
That was a British-level understatement, which, I mean, considering you're talking about colonization is appropriate, I guess.
Yeah.
So, funny thing about that, so looping back to Man in the High Castle, one of the characters who spent most of her time over in the Japanese-occupied territory from when she was very young... eventually, through plot, ends up over in the Nazi-controlled part of. And she ends up kind of undercover, blah, blah, blah. And she has to study to become a citizen. And one of the co-main character's kid is the one tutoring her. And she says, okay, da-da-da. It's like, okay, well, it leads into, like, something about the American exterminations. It's like, she's like, what? Because she's thinking like Jews and such over there. So she's thinking about that. She's like, American extermination? It's like, yeah, don't they teach you anything at school? Haven't you heard of the Indians? It's like, oh, ah.
Well, in this particular case, the Wichita can be traced back to at least 800 years to central and western Oklahoma. And they had towns, they had cities, and they traded broadly with their... fellow tribes on the plains. They traded with the Pueblo of New Mexico, as well as pottery from the Caddo, and probably even further with, like, the Cahokia. So, like, they had their little, basically, towns and cities and villages where they had semi-permanent residences before, you know, Europe got here and fucked it up.
Yeah.
I wonder if that when they were semi-permanent, if, like, just a couple of people stayed behind and... like, maintain the area, or if, like, everybody picked up and...
You know, they lived communally.
I don't know.
They preserved corn. They left their villages for buffalo hunts in the winter, lived in teepees. Just, like, the website has a lot of their history and talks a lot about, like, what they've got next. And then, of course, starting in 1820 to 1934, just the subheading is titled Days of Darkness. And it's like, ah, yeah. United States. first American and Wichita Treaty came in 1835, and then there can be no doubt about the sincerity of the Wichita who persuaded their Comanche allies to attend and sign this agreement that recognized their right to their traditional homeland. The treaty also contains the first official uses of the word name Wichita for the Wichita, Waco, and Tawakoni people. After the Texas Republic was established in 1836, the Wichita were forced to defend their lands against the intrusions of white settlers. Not until 1855, after Texas joined the U.S., was a reservation for the Wichita established on the Brazos River. However, continuing hostilities from neighboring settlers led the Wichita to move from Texas to lands on the Washita River. There they joined their northern relatives in what is now West Central Oklahoma. It's like, yep, the white man came in, said, yeah, sure, you guys can have your land. Oh, actually, no. We have guns.
You leave now.
So, basically, what's left, they mentioned that there was less than 800 members of their tribe that survived after all that bullshit to come back to Oklahoma and reestablish their stuff. So, needless to say, this whole entire area was Wichita roaming land, and as one would expect, given our history, we fucked them over a million fucking times. And at least I can say, well, at least they weren't one of the tribes that white settlers armed and had them exterminate the other tribes, because that totally happened too.
And then we in turn fucked them over.
Yeah, like, If you really want to know the bloody history of our country, look at how the way we treated the Native Americans and why things like Indigenous People Day is far more important than propping up the dusty feelings of Columbus.
If I remember right, Columbus Day was partially created by the Catholic Church as kind of this whole, let's basically have a Catholic hero.
Yeah. Well, we had
talked about this at lunch, I think, and basically, back around the time that Columbus Day was started, Italians were seen as a second class citizens. There was a lot of anti-Italian bias. So Italian Americans basically came together and be like, hey, assholes, America wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this great Italian explorer, Columbus. And they made the push to have Columbus Day a recognized holiday. So it was part of Italians trying not to be treated shitty by people who were seen as whiter than them. And now obviously, you know, Italian Americans and Irish Americans are treated like every other European descended American. But, you know, that doesn't erase all the fucked up genocidal shit that Columbus did. But it's just sort of like, we have this long history of treating different people like shit. So the only reason we got Columbus Day was because people were treating Italians like shit. And it's just, the whole country is founded on racism.
See, I knew that, like, wasn't Columbus bankrolled by Spain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was even fucking Italian. I associate Columbus with Spain, not Yeah, with...
I guess Columbus himself was Italian, but his voyages were bankrolled by Spain. Maybe he'd made himself a reputation as an explorer, and Spain was like, we'll hire you to do this, I guess.
Maybe.
It's been a while since, you know, I learned about Columbus in school, where we did not learn about, you know, the wholesale slaughter of natives. You know, we just learned, Columbus had these three ships and he discovered America, you know, and the whole idea of discovering a brand new place when there's a shitload of people already living there.
And he thought it was India. That's why we call them Indians.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the website in question is native-land.ca.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find where the tribes that were in your area lived, and like, it does show, like, current reservations, but also, like, historical ranges for people.
Yeah.
In our area, we also had Comanche folks. They're, like, to a bit of our west, like, say, Weatherford-ish.
Yeah.
But it's primarily those two.
But this is why we have Wichita, Kansas, and Wichita Falls, Texas. And,
yeah, pretty much.
You know, and that's, like, the only thing left of the Wichita around here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then of course you could really find out how densely populated the coasts were, because there were so many different tribes that lived around like the Bay Area and in just Northern California and the West Coast, because like it really was they were the West Coast elites that lived on the ocean and could fish and stuff, whereas like the Central Plains tribes had to do a lot more, you know,
roaming
and hunting.
Yeah,
I mean,
Because, I mean, that's neat. The thing. If you live near water and you have access to, like, fishing and
yeah, it's just like it's that. A really interesting map and can give you a lot of information on native tribes that you probably might not know about if you're, you know, if you live in an area and we kind of know where most of these tribes lived and you might have not heard about them in your schools, though your school probably might have a Native American mascot because, of course, they do.
Yeah.
So, shifting... slightly. So this is a very online topic next. This is a discussion about the new ContraPoints video and ContraPoints' more recent shifting towards being, I would not turfy because that would be really hard to be the turf and trans, but being like exclusionary, being gatekeepy.
I don't watch ContraPoints. I've only been watching Iron Points. Wow, is that joke too old?
No, it's just like, I thought you were being like, oh, you're actually watching YouTube Fuzz? No, you're just doing a bit. So, as of late, a lot of people have had concerns about ContraPoints and that, like, she's been very transmedicalist. And what that means is that people with that particular form of belief, they are generally trans people that believe that you have to have severe dysphoria to count. You have to go through full sex assignment surgery, all that full fun stuff. Basically, you have to do you have to flip the switch, essentially, all the way with a medical diagnosis and go all the way. Otherwise, you don't count as being trans.
Non-binary you also people, said they tend to discount the existence of non-binary genders because your very specific goal as a trans person should be to transition from the one binary to the other binary. Yeah. That's
to generally from their being belief. A dude to a capital W woman, as Contra has said.
Like and, I said, this is basically the TERFs of the trans world.
Yeah. And it's
basically you're not X, you're not a real, you know.
And it's bizarre gatekeeping as well. Because
it's the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Yeah.
But gatekeeping trans people instead.
Because not everybody has huge amounts of dysphoria. Not everybody wants to go through with surgery or whatever. I mean, a lot of people are just like, hey, hormones are fine. They'll fix my shit up and I'll feel better. But
and not everybody can afford.
And that's the biggest problem too, because this kind of stuff is vastly expensive.
Even hormones are hard to get on.
And yes, medical treatment for this stuff is more often than not covered by insurance, is incredibly expensive, and is out of the reach for most people in general, let alone your average trans person, who is generally on a lower socioeconomic level than your average cis person, for a multitude of reasons. And so it's disappointing, to be sure, because ContraPoints has produced some good videos in the past. Deconstructing the Alt-Right, their video on incels, and a couple of other ones, which I've enjoyed. But the last couple videos that they've done have been a bit less good. Specifically, their Transgenders video, where they come across as very strictly binarist in their thinking. And this is purely my opinion and how I viewed it, because I did watch the videos. Like, her most recent video on just men, which just felt kind of aimless. But the reason that this is even a thing that people are discussing, and because it is, it's a very online discussion and it's a very online concern. But when you have a platform, you really need to be careful how you use it. And when you platform people that have basically trans turf views, and the person in question is Buck Angel.
Oh, God.
Buck Angel is a trans man who is a porn star, and they transitioned 20-something years ago, and it was, like, a big deal at the time because, like, you would see these images where it's, like, back in my day, men would look like this, and it was, like, Buck Angel, and women look like this, and it was another transfeminine porn star. And it was one of those things where it's, like, if you knew who the person was, it was supposed to be a funny joke. And if you were a boomer on Facebook, you'd post that unironically.
Not realizing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when you include these kind of people in your work, it does kind of lend them your credibility. It's like, we would never platform some dumbass racist to have them to quote-unquote debate them on our show, because all we're doing is exposing you, our audience, to their bullshit views. There's nothing that's going to be gained other than us exposing you to a bad podcast episode. You know what I mean? Worse than usual, right? But the type of stuff they say, a tweet from Buck Angel. Also, Buck Angel is also the person who outed Lana Wachowski against her will back in the 2000s because Lana was dating Buck's wife at the time or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so, Buck maliciously outed her. He's got a lot of stuff about, denying that non-binary people can't be lesbians, which is weird. Let me spell it out for trolls who like to put words in my mouth. A lesbian is a woman who loves a woman, including trans women who identify as women. Stop saying I'm transphobic. You fucking trans trolls are so weak you have to create lies. Mine is based on hashtag facts. And the reply and says, I'm a non-binary lesbian. Is it that big a deal when you just let people identify with what feels right, or is parsing definitions more important to you? And then Buck replies, I think it's important to people who identify as women because that is what a lesbian is. A woman who loves a woman. Not an NB who loves a woman or even a trans person who loves a woman. So try to understand why that space is important to women. Which is a really weird delineation to make because they're trying to state that non-binary people can't be lesbian or gay because I guess they're their own weird third thing. Which, they're in between, but in their particular statement there, they posit non-binary people... relationships. So if a non-binary person is in a relationship with a woman and the non-binary person identifies as a man or a woman, it still can't be gay because they are non-binary with a binary person. It's some very weird hair splitting and people asking if his very particular views on dysphoria. Buck tweeting, lately so many kids ask me, Tranpa, do I need dysphoria to be transgender? Because they are being told they do not. Why would you want to transition if you do not have dysphoria? Real question. Please be nice. And someone replies, I know plenty of people that are non-binary and have no desire to change their bodies. They're still trans, as they do not identify with their assigned gender. And then Buck replies, no, they're not trans. They are non-binary. Trans-gender, not trans-non-binary. Do you see what I'm saying? And the reply is they still match the definition of transgender, which they do, because if you are a non-binary person, you do not identify with the gender you got handed at birth. No, they don't. They are non-binary. That's not transgender. Not sure how they have become the same thing. It's because basically it's just you're a fake trans if you don't have crippling dysphoria. And it's the only reason it comes up is that they are included in their platform this way. And when you get really exclusionary or really stuck on the gender binary, you're gonna be excluding people. And demanding that there be hoops that you have to jump through to count, to say, oh, you're just faking it, or you're just a trans trender, as if anybody does this for funsies, right? That obviously, for me, self-determination is a massive point of a person's right. You have the right to decide what works for you and what labels you want to apply, and determining your gender identity based on your own experience and your feelings is the core of that. And you don't have to jump through a million medical hoops and be declared that you have gender dysphoria by a doctor to begin identifying that, oh, well, I don't identify with my birth gender. This is more me, or this is a label that fits me better. And these people that try to put all these different hoops in the way to say, well, we've got money, or we're the old trans, and therefore we know what's what. You kids that are experiencing things in new ways are just, again, doing it for attention or something like that. It's super not helpful. Don't be that kind of person. If a person's gender identity doesn't match their gender at birth, then great. That's a perfectly valid way to proceed. The biggest point that I think anyone should take away with this is don't be a gatekeeping shithead. Even if we had fully trans-inclusive universal healthcare and everything was covered and you could just go to the doctor, get your shit handled right off the bat, no problems, no medical hoops to jump through, no cash barrier keeping you out, it's still up to the person. You have no right to say that someone else is not trans, or you are more trans than thou. You can't do that.
So, unpopular opinion.
Okay.
As someone who has identified as non-binary for many years now, in fact, it was one of the core tenets of me and Sarah's start of our relationship, is just being not exactly what we are.
Uh-huh.
I don't really have... So, trans is one thing. Gender fluidity and non-binary is a related thing. And uh-huh. they're all fall underneath this greater umbrella of non-standardized gender.
Uh-huh.
But I would not personally file non-binary under trans. We, or me, yes, I don't necessarily identify as a woman. In my headspace, and this has been for decades now, don't feel like that, but I don't have enough dysphoria to go through with going through the full medical. I don't feel like it's enough for me to go and completely shed the feminine side of my life. I'm not completely happy with it, but I'm not completely unhappy with it. But as far as gender weirdnesses, I'm fine with trans being a label that implies that you want to flip the binary. That we need a term for people who want to completely go from one to the other, and it doesn't need to be loop non-binary underneath that same label as trans. Because for years, trans has meant I was identified as a man, and I want to become the opposite of the binary. And that's been the definition that we've established. It's kind of like the difference between pansexual and bisexual. Both are wibbly and have their own connotations. And they're related, but they may not naturally be the same thing. One implies, you've had arguments that bisexual finds either the dynamic of male or female attractive, where pansexual implies the lines are much more blurred, where you're attracted to male or you're attracted to female or any blending thereof in between, you just like people.
Mm-hmm.
And the gender of the person is not particularly important because you're attracted to a wide variety of them.
Mm-hmm.
You just like people. I'm not saying that if someone hasn't gone through surgery and all that, that, you know, if they would, if they could, but they can't. For whatever reason, whether their medical conditions won't let their body stand up to it, whether or not their economic standards won't allow them to. I don't have a personal problem with them being treated as related or a lesser variant on trans, but I've got little to no problem with people who want to make the full flip and feel that strong urge to completely change their dynamic, having a term for that. Well, because what else would you call it to try and say, hey, I want to completely present as something else entirely 100% of the time? Non-binary to me means that sometimes you feel feminine, sometimes you feel masculine. At different times, you feel different gradients of that. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying I'm fine with using the label trans as being designating people who actually feel the urge to do the full flip, want A to B, you know, male to female, who want to go from one pure dynamic to the other pure dynamic. Maybe we need a term that will encompass all that, that an overall gender wibbly term that will loop in everything.
There's gender non-conforming is a term.
Yeah, but
I think trans is starting to be accepted as the umbrella term for everything, not strictly cis male, cis female.
And I agree with that. But if you take one term and you stretch it to uncover more than just A to B, and you take that umbrella and you use it to completely over out from gender wibbliness, from everything from you sometimes like to present feminine, but most of the time you're a dude, to someone who wants to go through and wants to completely change. I'm just saying you're stretching one term to accomplish both, where we already have two related terms that doesn't necessarily cover both dynamics. You know, if you take the trans and you use it as an umbrella term versus gender nonconforming, then what do you use to break down the subgroups? Because I know some people hate labels, and some people, I don't want to fall underneath a label because label provides definition. But on the other hand, label also contains a whole bunch of definitions, and it's language. And you need language to kind of convey concepts, broad concepts. So if you completely shed the whole label thing, if you want to just break down to people are people, that's great. But we're not at that. So we use labels to kind of give concepts, and concepts build a whole entire mental structure. And we've kind of gone through this through regular LBGT space on what's gay, what's bi, what's pan, what's demi, what's asexual. We've got all those different flavors to give labels to what a particular thing is. And maybe you don't fit neatly underneath that one label. You could say, I'm demisexual. And anyone who has learned that term knows kind of like, okay, she only really gets connection with someone that she's made a friendship with. And that's when the sexual spark snaps. Uh-huh. But if I just say bisexual, okay, I just randomly feel attracted to this. There's not a granular breakdown within the subset of who you are and what you do. So when you start using labels, you can use it to set definitions so that you can start a conversation, so you can kind of more granularly define a particular concept. So once that concept is more broadly known, then you can kind of start breaking it down further. It's kind of the evolution of language, not so much gatekeeping as if you leave the term trans just to include folks who want to go from A to B. That implies that either there's, they don't feel connected. They don't feel like a dude at all. They are a woman, and maybe they can't go through full medical. Maybe they can't afford it or whatnot. But if you say, I'm trans, you could say, okay, that is a person who does not feel how they present. That is a person who wants to completely flip their switch and go over to their A, they want to flip to B. If you say gender non-binary, then you know it's someone who they're a little bit wibbly somewhere through the spectrum. Like they,
seek androgyny.
Yeah, they want to tilt. Some days they feel like a nut. Some days they don't.
That's gender fluid.
Yeah, I know. And you've got gender fluid. You've got gender non-binary. And gender fluid is, sometimes things now, change from day to day.
I see what you're saying, and I think part of the problem is that we're sort of at a crux in the evolution of language right now, mm-hmm. that maybe we haven't kind of figured out as a society the right terms everyone can agree on.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting to. That's why I personally say I am fine with trans being restricted to A to B flip, whether or not they're medical or not, that they want to go the full shebang. Whatever their ability to do to so, but they have that desire. They never feel like going back to their original one.
I think we also kind of got lost the plot initially, because the reason that we're like being against transmedicalism specifically, because that is gatekeeping. You are not a real trans until you've gone through the surgery.
I know. I'm just saying
like, that was the start of this situation. But we have moved forward because I think what Fuzz says is right, that it is sort of a problem of language. And
I agree 100%.
I've described this in the past as like, I've described like how granular I get is related to, how far up the reputation, if you're like neutral, friendly, honored, exalted, or revered, exalted, like if you're exalted, I can go down the full chain of definitions for you. But if it's just like, I don't know you, I'm just this guy. If I do kind of know you, I'm gay, and then like, the more you know somebody, the more granular you can get. But when you have an overarching term that most people understand, like for me, if some rando asked me, so are you like gay? I'd be like, yeah, because that's easy. Like it's in my bio on Twitter that, I'm queer AF, because people just understand that. But, if you really get down to it, it's like, all right, well, I'm this, 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 and this. But that really has no bearing on my relation to you as a person in a random interaction on the street, but it will totally have a major bearing on if you're my friend and you start saying some dumb shit, right? So it really is a function of if somebody says non-binary, a lot of people aren't going to understand what that is. If you say you're trans, that does evoke a specific
A to thing. B flip.
But like when you're looking at like the Venn diagram of what things are, like trans as just the concept of not identifying with your birth gender, does include a lot of the non-binary options kind of in the middle. I mean, that's kind of why I have all right, well, I have the pride, the Philadelphia pride flag, I've got the trans pride flag, but I have the gender fluid pride flag all up in my office. Because it's like, gay, that's everything. You have the trans, which is very specific, and then the gender fluid, which is the specific, like, subset. But not everybody understands that. But most everybody will understand trans, and pretty much everybody understands the gay. Like, mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of, like, how granular you need to get and the language you use in dealing with people that are not as online or tuned into the shifting of language.
You know what this reminds you of? It's like phylum, species, family, and like yeah. the mammalian like animal you chart.
Like, it's a dog, but then like you go down to it.
It's like you're queer, trans, specifically non-binary, and then you could probably go
you know,
further down than that, depending.
And so,
or, no, gender fluid would probably be under non-binary.
Yeah. So you have, like, five layers of meaning here, when the biggest one up top, everybody kind of understands, oh, I'm gay.
See, and I wouldn't even... So, and this is gay, lesbian, bi, yada, 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 is your sexual orientation.
Yeah, your orientation is different than your gender. Whereas
trans and the... And the non-binary is how you feel about yourself. Like, this is my own personal image.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like looping back to a prior topic of not calling non-binary folks lesbians. That's an odd topic. So if you're a lesbian, you know, you find women in the pretty much binary definition as attractive. And you go onto a dating website and you find a profile of someone who says that they are a lesbian, you would expect that person, when you met up with them, to be a lesbian, to be a fully binary woman.
A person with a vagina.
Yeah. Well, that
opens up. That's often where you're going.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that person would have put that they were trans in their profile.
Not even trans, but even like gender fluid, gender non-binary. If you're non-binary, I'm going to, at least for the sake of this argument, says that you're either presenting as mostly kind of as a man, though you do feel sometimes feminine, or you present feminine, or yada, yada, yada.
Mm.
And the term for lesbian is not just for your own use. It's for other people to know. If I was a woman looking for another female presenting person and I saw a thing that says lesbian, I would assume by the pure term that this person who I am speaking with online and is saying that is someone who is either A, presenting fully as a woman, or it has a female body, and just because that's the person, that's the search term. I look for a lesbian. So I would assume that when I look for a lesbian, I'm going to either find a purely female presenting person or someone who's female bodied, because that's what I'm searching for and that's what I find attractive. Now, if I'm out there and I'm not strictly as interested in people who are presenting or have that body, and I go and I search for, you know, other terms, female non-binary, I haven't been on dating websites. Again, evolution of language. I would not expect, if I was out there looking for someone, to find either someone who spends 50% of their time presenting as a man, to find them as a lesbian, because that's not what the general language implies when you say lesbian. So if you then take that term and you apply it to someone who doesn't fit, it starts really kind of mucking around with some of the established language that's been out there for forever, instead of like kind of creating new discussions.
Well, I think specifically this also kind of loops back to self-determination as to what you're going to use as your own personal label. Like, if you are two feminine-bodied people, two vagina havers, you know, that are in a relationship and one person in that duo is a non-binary person, they would still be perfectly valid to term themselves as a non-binary lesbian couple, because one of the parties, even though she was AFAB, they don't necessarily identify as female, even though it's what they got, right? Like, so we're coming in on another weird intersection of language, because we're intersecting gender identity into sexual attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't even touched that third little Venn diagram orb of modes of attraction, which is in its own little thing that we're not smart enough to discuss.
Are you talking about like homoerotic versus homo? Erotic.
There was an interesting meme in the fan chat a few days ago that basically described like modes of attraction as like, I want pie, I do not want pie, I only want the pie after I've gotten familiar with it. Or it was going down various modes of attraction that had been delineated as like various ways of how you'd want pie, or like, I am disgusted by pie for like hard asexual people, or like, I only want to eat the pie, I don't want to enjoy it, or something like that. Like, so we are coming up on a weird bit of language. Like, we are bumping up against what we've got words for, right? Like, we're not trying to pretend we're these big brain geniuses here. We're only discussing our particular feelings on the matter. So if we have made you mad, we're sorry.
Write in and
but feel free to write in to southpawscast@gmail.com and tell us we're a bunch of morons.
Well, we've got two very different opinions.
So the problem I see from as far as like contrapoints and what Buck Angel are saying is that, and this is a separate topic than what Shiva's discussing. The problem for me is when other people try to police your relationship. Like, apparently one of the things Buck Angel said was if you're in a relationship with someone who's assigned male at birth and they're not fully transitioning, you can't call yourself a lesbian relationship. Am I right about that, Saverin?
He said something
along the lines. And my point of view on that is that we'll fuck him for trying to define someone else's relationship. If that cis woman is describing her own relationship with a transgender woman as being in a lesbian relationship, I'm not going to question her on that. I'm going to be like, okay, you're a lesbian and that's your girlfriend. And if someone tells me they're trans, I'm just going to be like, okay, whatever. And then like Saverin, if I get to know them, then maybe but I don't question that, I guess. So sort of let people, like self-determination, what Saverin was saying, is like let people sort of define themselves. And what you're saying is like, is a whole other aspect of that. Or like when you're looking for someone to date and you have a particular range of humanity that you're attracted
and
to.
And what you understand these terms that pre-exist, what they mean.
And how do you drill that down into saying these are the types of people that I want to date? And that, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't think we're there yet.
Because self-determination is one thing, but you can call yourself a banana all you want, but if somebody looks at you and they see like a red shiny fruit, and they're going to be really confused about what's going on,
And I'm also very uncomfortable about this kind of thinking because of the whole trans panic thing that's been used as a defense. Cis men to kill someone that turned out to be a trans woman instead of a cis woman.
And that's a whole problem in and of itself. It's mostly part of my issue is folks grabbing already existing terms that we understand, that at least society, at least especially LGBT, has some kind of established use and understanding of, and then putting a whole different spin on it, which then muddies what we all thought. I'm more like new terms don't, it becomes really confusing when you start changing existing terms to apply them to things that are outside of the understood paradigm. And that happens. I mean, everything changes. But I guess part of me would have been more comfortable with something like gender nonconforming, gender fluid, gender non-binary as a more umbrella term, because it's not as already kind of established in the mindset as what this is. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like come up with new terms and new understandings rather than repurposing old concepts and stretching them to fit something that's kind of already established. That's kind of where, like demisexual is kind of new and it has come out. And it wasn't really well known up until like the last couple of years. But now it's becoming more and more widely understood. So if you say I'm demisexual towards men, which I am, when I say I'm demisexual towards men, people who have come across that term and become woke, they understand, like, okay, that means that she doesn't form, you know, sexual attraction towards men until she becomes a close friend with them. So it's kind of like, I guess I like newer terms for things rather than stretching older ones. And self-determination comes into that because you're taking language that people thought they already understood and kind of turning it on its ear, which in some cases is good. And in other cases, it kind of already confuses something that's already really fucking confusing, as it is, especially to someone who's not in the LGBT sphere. So that's where I'm coming from. It's kind of like language, labels, understanding, providing as a framework of concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So
I understand what you're saying. I just don't have a good answer for it.
I don't either. I'm just saying that that's why I don't particularly have a problem with trans being for A to B, whether or not B is currently feasible for whatever reason, and gender non-binary being something a little bit more wibbly.
And this has been your struggle session with the host of Southpaws. I'm sure you guys might want to write in about this.
There's being really overtly shitty, like what started this conversation of being like, oh, you like to dress as a woman and call yourself a woman, but you're not taking hormones, you're not agonizing over your gender, and you're not seeking surgery. How dare you call yourself trans? It's like, that's bad. That's a bad opinion to have, in my opinion. Oh, wow, that was really bad. You know, if that person calls themselves trans, let them call themselves trans. That's not Buck Angel's. You know, he doesn't have that ability to, like, legislate, to, you know, to be a judge on that. But, yeah, you know, it's sort of like writing porn. Tag your shit, you know. If you're active on Tinder or Growler or any kind of social media site, you know, use all the tags, I guess.
Yeah.
Make sure that you fully put out there. Exactly.
Don't slip in that vor without tagging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though, as a related, you mentioned Tinder, right?
Yeah.
If you go to Tinder support, their Twitter page, 90% of their at replies to people is them apologizing that a user got banned for being trans. Not joking.
Does Tinder actively ban trans?
People report trans people on Tinder. And they get banned, and then people tweet at Tinder support, and Tinder's like, oh, we're so sorry, please contact us, and we'll try to make it right. And if you look at that Twitter account, it's 90% of their at replies are that. So I think we have probably struggle-sessioned this enough for 1 week. I bet we will get some emails about this, so you can email us southpawscast@gmail.com. And that is the last big topic I had for the week, but I have a couple more ones.
Okay.
Little quick ones. So it's Halloween season and the blood is flowing. So an article from Iowa is, blood fills Iowa family's basement.
What?
What sounds like a scene from a horror film is reality for the Lestina family of Bagley, Iowa. Nick Lestina and his family of seven were getting ready to put their house on the market until their basement was flooded with animal blood. Their basement was filled with nearly 5 inches of animal blood, fat, and bones as a result of drainage from a meat locker next door.
Ugh.
For the last 10 years, the family has lived next to Doll's Meat Locker, but have never had any problems until recently. Lestina said his neighbors were dumping hog and cattle remains down a floor drain, which is connected to his pipes. He immediately reported it to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, which confirmed the substance as, yes, blood, fat, and bones. They got the Department of Health involved due to the hazards. DNR said the meat processor has been cooperating with investigations. Lestina said Dahl, so far, has not been a good neighbor in this situation. They haven't reached out at all. In fact, they haven't taken any accountability for it, said Lestina. They say it's not their fault and told me good luck. If you want to do anything about it, it's on my dime and my schedule. But the owners of Dahl's have contacted media to say they're working with the insurance company to make sure the family is reimbursed.
So two different, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a very motivated seller in Iowa if you're looking for a house. Yeah,
many of the Lestina family's belongings,
just as long as you don't mind the blood pool in the basement,
were destroyed by the blood in the basement, including a bed they were saving for their toddler son. And there's an image of the dad standing in 5 inches of blood and a blue race car bed.
Oh.
So a blue race car bed floating in a 5-inch blood pool.
That's how exciting.
Did you share this?
I quote tweeted it with, hey, that chat. Sequel to The Shining is looking pretty good.
Normally the blood gets off on the second floor.
Right.
So that was our news of the weird. Then there is the last thing before we probably need to wrap it up, because we're past an hour and a half on the raw recording
right
now.
Is it about the chalupas?
Is the chalupas. So, New Jersey couple files federal suit over the price of chalupas.
Okay, so I saw the headline, but I didn't read it, because I want you to explain it to me.
All right, so, the TLDR...
Tell us a story, Saverin.
A New Jersey couple is suing Taco Bell in federal court over a $2.18 price disparity in its chalupa craving boxes, claiming the difference between the advertised price of the meals and the actual price charged at a restaurant violates the state's Consumer Fraud Act. The couple filed the fraud suit in September against Yum Brands because the commercials advertised the chalupa cravings boxes at $5 each. But when the couple finished their order at the Taco Bell near their Middlesex County home, they were charged $12.18. According to NJ.com, when the couple asked about the price discrepancy, the Taco Bell manager told them the commercial noted that prices may vary, and so not every Taco Bell was required to charge the $5 as advertised. This didn't sit well with the Estrellas. You can't tell someone you're going to charge them $5 in big bold print and then take it away with a fine print disclaimer, Douglas Schwartz, the attorney representing the Estrellas, told NJ.com. It's consumer fraud being perpetuated upon not only citizens of New Jersey, but all over the country. The lawsuit also names ABC Corporation as a co-defendant, presumably for its role in airing the ads. The Estrellas claim that the advertising is not only fraudulent, but that it wasted their time in driving to Taco Bell, their gas money, and their $2.18.
Now, I can kind of see their point, because how many different things have we seen come out where you see, da-da-da-da-da, star, and then you have to read the fine terms and conditions of, you know, like, I can see their point, and I'm kind of tired of this in general with marketing. Like, they'll advertise the lowest possible combination of it, but and then the little star, and then you get to a place and like they'll say it's at for $3.99, you get this, and you get there and it's like something the size of your pinky, which no human would expect to consume. And then to get a realistic size,
there are some people that will consume a pinky.
But to get like the average size of whatever you want, it's you know, a lot more expensive. And we kind of get this whole thing, like they get away with advertising a thing for X price when just to get you in. But when you get there, it's not actually the case. And we see this all over the marketing strata.
So the most obvious one that comes to my mind is a few years ago, the federal government got involved, passed a law that airlines have to advertise their flight prices inclusive of all government fees. Taxes and fees, because they were advertising like $99 one-way trip to Atlanta or whatever, and that, you know, it was almost more than that in additional fees.
You'd
stuff.
End up paying like $175 after you do the airport fee and this and this and this.
Well,
and
it's $99 one way, and you don't take a one-way trip usually. So,
well, unless you're working for Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, well.
So my only problem, Saverin, is that you really should have read the lawyer's statement in a stoner voice, because these people have got to be stoners, right? Everything from like the name of the item, it's just like, hey man, we drove all the way over here for the chalupa cravings box because we had a fucking mad case of the chalupa cravings, and it cost us $2.18. That's like an eighth of a nug that we didn't get to smoke tonight because of Taco Bell and capitalism and fuck the we're gonna eat the rich, man, right after we finish this bowl.
This whole thing kind of, in ways, smacks of the McDonald's hot coffee incident.
It could, but it also, the most possible explanation is that you're looking at corporate-owned stores versus franchisees. And they do have leeway to set their prices. So, like, if Taco Bell is paying to put a Taco Bell commercial on the thing, it specifically applies to Taco Bell stores run by Yum Brands.
But the actual consumer is not going to understand the fucking difference.
That's true. But
sort of like not all Wendy's had the double stack for a while.
Or the... not all the Burger Kings had the Impossible Whopper for a while.
Or not all the McDonald's get the McRib at the same time.
Or the Shamrock Shake at the same time. And well, I mean, because like the pork McRib is only when pork has reached a very particular price point and in that particular region, and they can get their processed pork patties at cheap
price. When we've been able to grow enough pork in the lab.
Yeah.
We're able to make the McRibs
and it's just pure enough to pass the FDA to be qualified as pork product. Just like processed cheese food.
I'm curious about the Impossible Whopper. I've heard several people try it and they say it's not bad.
It's pretty good. I've gotten them a couple times at different Burger Kings around here. I went to the one, you got the one right down the street from me here, but also you got the one on Marsh and Bush. Man.
Mm-hmm. Never go to the one like right over there. Oh my god, they are the worst Burger King on the face of the planet.
Is it bad as the Whataburger we always go to? Because that one's gone downhill.
Oh god, no. It makes that look like a shiny example. Okay.
I've only gone through the drive through there.
No. It's close. And me and Siam happen to like Burger King, where Sero thinks it is the devil incarnate because he hates that grilled taste.
Oh.
But me and Siam like it just fine, so we'll pop out and we'll get it.
What kind of Texan hates the taste of grill?
I don't know. It's but Sero.
They're Sero.
You go through the drive-thru and they're like, what do you want? Like, not, like, their customer service is, like, -1.
They're like Janine and it's Ghostbusters.
Like, it's basically
buy
like,
something, I'll leave.
What do you want? Sup? Hey. You know, they are, like, so incredibly slack-ass and unprofessional. And so we've gone up there late at night. They are still open. You can see them inside yucking around, and they won't answer the drive-thru.
Just like, nah.
That's
Burger machine's broke.
That's basically it. Like, and this is not new. They've been doing this like the entire time that we've been here. So
I'm sorry. He got me with the burger machine is broke, because I'm imagining we're not dealing with animals or vegetables or buns or anything anymore. It's just a fucking lever you pull and it just squirts a burger out.
But yeah, the one near here is god awful. It has to be the owner that they can't be. Corporate owned. They have to be like a franchisee, and the owner must not give a flying fuck because they have been this awful for the entire time I've owned this house. They're the worst. I mean, the food is usually pretty fresh. I haven't like had them, you know, turn out a bad product, but my god, they're the most unprofessional Burger King I've ever seen, or any fast food restaurant. Like I said, they make your Whataburger look like a shining example of restaurant.
Well, at least our Whataburger changes their meat bag often for when they're squirting the patties onto the grill.
Like damn. I said, I haven't had a problem with the food over there, but there's something going on with the staffing.
The more you know. I mean, I don't have ever reason to go by there, and I'll keep that in mind whenever I'm roaming about and craving some cheap nugs.
The food will be fine, but... don't expect it. It's got all of... Okay, so if you've ever been to many Asian eateries in the area, I know you haven't because you're allergic to soy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Customer service is a suggestion. You're lucky if they just slap the food down. You'll never see them again. They don't believe in customer service. And it's just the way they always are. You know, screw smiles. Screw is just like, take your money, eat your shit, and leave. They've got about that level of customer service. I mean, I don't require people to be bubbly or anything else, but after working fast food for 4 years, I'm always kind of shocked that they're allowed to do the kind of shit that they do.
Okay, so I have one last thing, and we're going to wrap this up because it is getting a little cold. It is nearly 10 o'clock, but we got 10 till then, so let's get this one last thing in. So... as we exist in this world, we are all, to a degree, poisoned by irony. And someone put together a helpful chart. And as we go through this, you, the listener, feel free to write in about where upon this listing you fall. So the levels of irony codified. Irony level 0. True sincerity. You watch MasterChef and talk about it the next day with your coworkers, whom you like, at your job, which you like. You put a Dilbert comic you laughed at on your desk. You support your college football team. You have a computer at home you use for emails, a mobile phone for emergencies, and a Facebook account for both you and your partner. Level 1. Joyless sarcasm. You like South Park and Family Guy. You think sports are gay. You think religion is gay. You think voting's gay. You think caring about anything is gay and fail, except bacon, which is epic. You make rage comics about how you owned a Christian once. Irony level 2. Detached sincerity. You only listen to bands and watch movies that make you sad. You don't know how you would to enjoy things in a normal way anymore, so when you find a new thing, you make it your entire life until you drain it of any excitement you may have felt. You read fanfiction. You have a sleeping disorder.
Uh-oh, that's you with My Little Pony.
Irony level 3.
You said it, not me.
You like things because you like them. You listen to pop music and watch action movies. You have abandoned the idea of deeper meaning in art or for surface-level enjoyment. You know what identity politics is. You remind people to stay hydrated. You have a podcast. Stay hydrated, kids.
Okay, what level is that?
Three? Irony level 3.
Irony level 3, all right.
Irony level 4, online. You love to post. 69 and 420 are funny. Shrek and Austin Powers are funny. You mostly follow comedy accounts and you see new memes months before your real life friends do. You have found yourself a weird little community in your slice of the internet.
Okay, that's you. Because you're the one that tells me all the memes.
Oh, just wait. I'm further up the chain, I'm afraid.
I've got Kadistra to send me all the memes.
Okay.
Irony level 5. Extremely online. Uh-oh. You hate to post. You're in multiple group chats with only the only people you still like. You don't make jokes. You only do bits. You use your real name. Level 6. Irony poisoning. The only memes you enjoy anymore are confusing and alienating. 9/11 is funny. You have depression. You will either end up a Marxist or a school shooter. Irony level 7. The ultimate poster. Posting is no longer a desire, but a responsibility. Your offline and online personas are functionally the same. You recognize every avatar that crosses your feed, whether they are friend or foe in the posting wars. Eventually, the white-hot core of irony powering you will kill you, but until that day it does, you will be unstoppable. And irony level 8, terminal brainworms. You are delusional and can no longer discern between online and offline. You believe everyone that disagrees with you is a Russian hacker. Your grandchildren will no longer speak to you. You will die staring at a screen. So, tag yourself.
I kind of think you will die staring at a screen is basically everybody at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the grandpas on Facebook whose children don't talk to them anymore definitely have the brain worms.
I guess I'm 3.
I'm like a 6 or a 7, but I pretend to be a 3.
I could see something from each group. Yeah, for me. I'm like a slice across all of them.
But it's like,
wait, so you're a podcast. Are you irony non-binary then?
I guess.
Irony fluid. Oh, no.
I mean, I go to work and I enjoy my job. But my computer's but more than
69 and 420. Lol.
Yeah.
Nice. So feel free to write in and tell us where you fall on that menu. So yeah, it's 1:45 on the raw recording. It will be edited to be shorter than that by the time you guys hear it, but I have got a lot of editing to do thanks to a few planes coming by and collecting of thoughts. As always, you can find us on Twitter at SouthPawsCast. You can find us on Patreon.com. If you have enjoyed the struggle session and would like to contribute to our further hashing things out like the old people we are.
And knowing that our ultimate opinions will matter nowhere in the world because that will be determined by the world at large.
Yeah.
Of which we are only a tiny, tiny fragment.
We're just opinionated furries. So SouthPawsCast on Patreon.com. So Patreon.com/SouthPawsCast. Email us southpawscast@gmail.com. You can send us angry anonymous messages via our Tumblr, southpawscast.tumblr.com. You cannot send angry messages to me on twitter.com @SavrinDrake because I will block you. You can find me on Twitch @Savrin and on Mastodon, Savrin@snouts.online.
I'm on Twitter @FuzzWolf. You could buy books from me at forplanet.com or ebooks at baddogbooks.com. I just posted like 5 new ebooks, so go and check those out. That's about it for me. really.
And you'll find all three of us, including me, and our fan chat on Telegram.
Yep.
Yep.
It's busy and full of memes.
And lots of porn. Which is
telegram.com/southpawsk.
No.
If only it was that easy.
No, that's... I have to regenerate the code from time to time, as you do, but I'll put a new one out.
You only get to do that 12 times.
Well. Oh, well. Well, guess we'll die. So, on
Doctor,
that note...
And that is Fuzz's nth Doctor Who reference for the episode.
Woo!
All right, you've kids. Reached your quota.
A show I've thrown myself fully into and haven't gotten sick of.
So we've reached
aren't
our...
Aren't you special,
our
Fuzz.
Doctor Who quota. So, on that night...
Good night.
And big books.